Good morning, Tucson, Arizona. Welcome to Jump In Tucson. I am your host, Grant Kruger. Very excited to be here with you this wonderful Wednesday morning, October 9th. The last few days of summer are upon us over here as we're watching the weather. Believe it or
not. 3 weeks into fall.
Right. Believe it or not, Matt, we are getting our patio heaters ready. You might not think about that right now, right? It's October 9th, and you're like, is this guy crazy? Is he really moving all the patio heaters? But we are ordering the gas. We are getting it ready because right around Halloween night is actually about the first night that it gets cold here in the old Pueblo, and you got to dust off that old leather jacket and say, hey buddy, I haven't seen you in 10 months, and you shake it off and get to put it on and wear your cool winter fashion. And it's coming. Winter is coming. It's probably about 3 weeks out there, my listeners, and so we are looking forward to that one here in the restaurant business. As we watch the weather this week, though, I certainly feel for our neighbors in the state of Florida as you watch Hurricane Milton make its way and descend upon the state, right? And when I think of hurricanes, I personally think of the Waffle House Index. For those of you who don't know what the Waffle House Index is, right? Waffle House is a chain of course, breakfast diner restaurants. There's about 1,600 of them in the United States, located primarily in the southeastern region of the U.S. And so ever since 2004, FEMA has internally been using a Waffle House Index to rate a red light, yellow light, green light, depending on whether the Waffle House is fully open, it's a green light. If it's partially open with a limited menu, it's a yellow. And if that Waffle House is shut down, it's a red. And they track the community's responsiveness to hurricanes with how quickly the Waffle Houses can respond and reopen, right? And so that's going to be part of our topic here for Food for Thought today, are these diners and how diners actually are such a huge part of our community. If you've read the news in Tucson recently, we've had a rash of problems with our youth in the evenings. A few weeks ago, we talked about the smoke shops, right? And the fatal shootings that were happening in smoke shops and all the difficult problems that smoke shops have been bringing upon the city of Tucson, right? The hookah lounges and smoke shops there. And recently, it's been on the news, street takeovers. Perhaps if you follow TMZ Tucson or really any of the news feeds, you saw some of our old Pueblo View stomping on top of cars, setting it on fire. Somebody was shot recently as well, too. And all of this ties into this lack of a third place. Last month, we touched on a third place a little bit about what that might be, right? A first place is sort of considered your home. The second place is your workplace. And that third place is going to be a cultural place where you gather and communicate and discuss, right? It comes from a psychologist named Ray Oldenburg, who wrote a book called The Great Good Place in 1989, and talks about all these characteristics of a third place. When I was a youth, third places for us were often things like 24-hour diners. We maybe weren't old enough to go to all the local bars and clubs, but we had places like the 24-hour coffee exchange that used to be on Campbell and Grant, or perhaps Grill located downtown, that were these really cool locally owned diner concepts. And we're seeing a reduction in concepts like that. There's less and less. There are less Waffle Houses in Tucson today than there were 20 years ago. And even some of the Denny's and other chain type concepts don't stay open as late anymore. Unfortunately, our super high minimum wage, and I hate to continuously pontificate about this one, but our super high minimum wage has really affected our ability to keep these concepts open 24 hours a day. And as such, they tend to shut down earlier and earlier, and the locals can't even compete with that one at all. I've got Charles Heller, I think, on the line right now that wants to talk about that Waffle House Index. You with me over there, Charles?
I am, and I think that the Waffle House Index is nowhere near granular enough to accurately measure the public sentiment. I think you need a cheese and eggs index. I think you need a grits index, and I think you absolutely must have a scattered, smothered, and covered index.
I like it. That is a great call over there, Charles. I appreciate you calling in and giving us the 411 on the Waffle House Index over here. But I've got one more for you. I'm worried that we need to have a smoke shop index, unfortunately, in Tucson. Right now, police calls to hookah lounges are up 41% year to date. Calls to smoke shops are up 48% year to date. And there are over 110 smoke shops open 24 hours here in Tucson right now. Unbelievable. So what do we do with these smoke shops, right? These have become the third places for our youth to gather. And then you wonder why you've got problems in places like this. And it's because we not only don't have diners to go to, the other places we used to go to as youth, hanging out in parks, drinking a little bit of alcohol clandestinely, well, our parks are taken over too here in the old Pueblo. So where can our youth go when we don't have local diners anymore? They can't really afford to stay open 24 hours a day, particularly in the lack of alcohol sales, right? Because as I've talked about before on this show, that, well, vodka being the sweet elixir that pays for nearly everything in the restaurant business and keeps it going, well, you can't sell alcohol 24 hours a day. We've got a bunch of rules about that one. And so it adds to the complexity about what our youth can do. Where can they go to let off some steam? They certainly can spend some of their third place on the internet and communicate with each other in that way. But that's not the level of socialization that we need as human beings. Somehow out there, some way, we've got to find a bit of change to open up some third places for our youths, right? This might be a change in even alcohol rules. Perhaps it's a change to reduce the drinking age back to 18. Perhaps there's a way you should allow places like this to stay open later. I'd almost rather have my 19-year-old youth hanging out in a supervised bar than hanging out at a street takeover in some capacity or at a hookah lounge at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. You know, it's safe to say that those places aren't so safe right now. So a lot to be said about third places and that loss of local diners out there. I lament looking at even like a Welcome Diner on Broadway, such a beautiful, iconic building, completely refurbished by Rep and McLean Construction, right? Paige Rep was on the show just a couple of weeks ago, and it's been sitting dormant for years. We just don't see those kind of businesses anymore. And without them, our youth is really lacking some place to let off steam, some place to socialize and get together. And so as a community, more than regulating smoke shops, more than regulating street takeovers, we've got to figure out a way to create a third place for our youth here in the old Pueblo moving forward. When we come back after the break, we're going to talk all things election month popping up over here. Mail-in ballots are getting out to you just this week. Don't go anywhere. We're going to break down some of these ballot initiatives and hot topics about that. When we come back after the break, you're listening to Jump In Tucson at 10:30 a.m. The Voice, your home for local news and talk. Hey, welcome back to Jump In Tucson with your host, Grant Kruger. Lots and lots of things going on in the old Pueblo this whole last week, right? We had Tucson Meet Yourself. We had rockin' events with NIL for the basketball red-blue game on Friday. Of course, the Arizona Wildcats game on Saturday. And as well, we had the Tucson Iron Chef competition, right? Where the two-time reigning champion, Kenneth Foy from Dante's Fire, was dethroned by Anthony Dromgoole from Oban, right? Winning that particular event. So congratulations, Chef Anthony from Oban. Do go out there and take a peek at Oban downtown. It's been a well-executed sushi concept in downtown Tucson for over a decade right now. And you got to give them a lot of credit for that longevity. Speaking of downtown Tucson, some interesting restaurant news popped up this week that Elvira's, the well-beloved Mexican restaurant that was in Tubac, Arizona, right, that had a location downtown as well, too, closing right around COVID, has decided they're going to open a second location again, but not in the old Pueblo. Elvira's is on their way to Scottsdale, and they're going to open up a concept called Elvira's DC Ranch. Chef Ruben, who runs that concept, is teaming up with Tom Kaufman, who happens to be the ownership group of The Living Room, yet another concept that also didn't make it here in the old Pueblo. I feel really bad for a number of these restaurants in downtown Tucson. When you look at what happened to Pizzeria Bianco, right, a concept that in Phoenix has has a 3-hour wait, and in downtown Tucson, out of business in 18 months. Like, truly heartbreaking. And Elvira's as well, a well-executed, beautiful restaurant by Chef Ruben, didn't make it, and he's taken his talents up to Scottsdale as opposed to the old Pueblo, which is a real bummer, I think, for all of us in the community. On top of that, big news in politics everywhere. It is election month. Mail-in ballots are on their way out there. Both vice presidential candidates are in town today in Tucson. Unbelievable. And that shows how important Arizona is right now on a national level with elections. And it's really going to show us how important all these local ballot initiatives are going to be for every single one of us here in the state. There are currently 13 ballot initiatives. Those of you who are registered voters probably got the 355-page voter guide that was sent out by Secretary of State Fontes. This thing is absolutely massive, and it breaks down a whole number of these initiatives. A couple of them happen to be near and dear to my heart. And if you look at the arguments for, you'll see a couple pieces written by yours truly out there talking about some of these ballot initiatives and why they mean not just so much to me and our business, but the community as well too. First and foremost, Proposition 138, right? This is that Tipped Worker Protection Act. We've talked about this one a bit on this show because logically, the Tipped Worker Protection Act is going to help local restaurants find ways to both stay affordable and stay in business. As we were just talking about these third places and the lack of businesses that are staying open late, well, as wages increase, particularly server wages, from what was $2.13 an hour, the tipped minimum wage part, all the way up to now what will be $11.70 an hour on January 1st, 2025, these concepts just can't afford to stay open later anymore. And so you see concepts closing down earlier and earlier and earlier. I've been turned away for tables at 8 p.m. before in Tucson because places close often just so much earlier. As soon as the dinner rush is over, they're out of there because they can't afford to stay open. Proposition 138 would essentially create the tipped wage, moving it from a fixed $3 an hour off of whatever the full Monty minimum wage is to a 25% less than whatever that full Monty minimum wage would be. And that would be codified in Arizona's constitution, which is pretty neat. A change to Arizona's constitution is no small feat. It's not easy to do. And it's very tough for groups to come out and challenge this later in the future. Proposition 138 has very little to do with what the server wage is going to be in 2025. And maybe even very little to do with what it's going to be in 2026. What Proposition 138 is going to do is essentially make it incredibly difficult for another leftist union group to come in and try to make that server wage $18 an hour and completely torpedo the tipped system as we know it. And that's going to keep full service restaurants in business for a lot longer here in the state of Arizona than in other states. When you look at what's happened to California, Washington, Oregon, and most recently the municipality inside of Washington, D.C., is when they got rid of that tip credit, the tip models we know it starts to go by the wayside, and restaurants have began adding service charges to the bottom of their bill, a practice that nobody likes. On top of that, even the servers don't like it, because those service charges, my dear listener, don't go to the staff. They don't have to. Tipped wages can go, legally are required under federal law, to go 100% to the staff. But service charges aren't. They become taxable income on the business. And you could pay your managers. You could pay your dishwashers. I could pay myself if I wanted to out of those service charges. And so when those things start popping up, it reduces the wages of tipped earners. We've had a couple of servers from our restaurant group talk about this, and we're going to talk about this. I'm going to be on the Tasty Tucson show with Wes this Saturday. We're going to break down that one. So if you've got any more interest in that topic, do take a look at Proposition 138, the Tipped Worker Protection Act. Do vote for that one. You're going to really help out local restaurants. You're going to help keep those third places alive and moving in the future, not just in 2025, but in 2030 and beyond. As well, you're going to see a piece written by me in favor of Proposition 312, right? This one is aptly named the Property Tax Rebate for Non-Enforcement of Municipal Laws, you know, initiative, and that's a mouthful. But what that one means is that business owners who are suffering the effects of rampant homelessness, encampments, and municipal laws that are not being enforced by your local government, any of them could apply for a property tax rebate. You could, capped at whatever your property taxes are annually for the year, you could show expenses for cleanup of encampments, graffiti removal, fencing, cameras, lighting, and all kinds of things that you would expect your local government to be doing, right? We want our local government to provide security. We want them to provide roads. We want them to provide parks, all the things that are expected in the city charter. But instead, we've chosen to provide free buses and Narcan and basically allow public camping in parks to a level that makes parks unusable, not just for our young youth, but even for these teens and early 20s kids that don't have a place to meet up. And then you wonder why they're out there on the streets squirreling around, you know, doing 360 donuts at clandestine intersections. It's because they don't have any place to let off some steam. And we're letting that sort of thing happen to our parks. So Proposition 312 essentially, hopefully, won't actually save the businesses any money. I'm hoping to, quite frankly, never apply for a property tax rebate in any capacity. I'm hoping that this acts as an incentive for our local cities to enforce the laws that are already on the books. As we've talked about before, it is currently illegal to panhandle from medians in Pima County right now. It is Pima County Ordinance 2016-30. You cannot do that. And yet, everywhere you see this happening. And so at some point, if we don't hold our cities accountable, this is going to get worse and worse and worse. And I don't want that to happen. And I believe that you don't want that to happen either. So do take a look at Proposition 312. I know it's a mouthful. It sounds kind of complicated over here. But at the end of the day, this one is just acting as an incentive for our local municipalities to enforce the laws already on the books. Now, I've got one more to talk about here before the break, and this is a complicated one, and you're going to see people on both sides of this issue. No, we're not going to talk Proposition 139 and argue abortion over here on Jump Into Some, but we are going to talk Proposition 140, right? This one is incredibly complicated because what it would do is completely retool how we handle primary elections, right? Ultimately, right now, of the 30 legislative districts that we have in the state of Arizona, 24 of them are decided in the primaries, meaning that they're either so far right or so far left that whoever wins the primary essentially walks right into that seat. And so to win a primary in one of those districts, you've got to be either really far right, right? You're Mark Fincham type, or you've got to be really, really far left. And so proponents of Proposition 140 are suggesting that by eliminating this primary system from a partisan level and just having what could potentially be the top two vote getters from either party would provide more centrist candidates, people that live in a world probably closer to where you and I live in, right? That don't have the far, far ends of the parabolic curve of politics on them. An interesting topic indeed, something that I do, quite frankly, find intriguing. That being said, there's one little clause here in 140 that gives me some pause. And I want you listeners to think about this one as well, too. And that is that Proposition 140 doesn't necessarily limit the number of candidates on that general ballot to just two. It leaves that one up to the legislative branch of the government to do. And this is maybe a bridge too far. This is the one that's got me worried just a little bit about Proposition 140. To give you an idea, there are absolutely zero incumbents for this one. There are pretty much no Republicans or no Democrat incumbent like politicians that are for this particular change in the system. And what it would say is that the legislative branch of the government could decide to have between two candidates on the general and up to five. And that up to five could create ranked choice voting. And that is, I think, the worry and where you see some opposition come in for Proposition 140. But you are seeing a lot of business groups here in the Old Pueblo support this one. SALC, right, has taken a big stance for this one. There's a lot of local influencers, Sarah Smallhouse Brown and Pat DeConcini, and, you know, some very well-heeled people and educated people doing that work. So do read Proposition 140 and think about that one. When we come back after the break, we are going to bring in House Representative Matt Gress, and he's going to talk with me about why there are so many ballot initiatives out there as well, too, and all kinds of fun things as we continue election month here on Jump in Tucson. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to Jump in Tucson. I am your host, Grant Kruger. Every day on Jump in Tucson from 9 to 10 a.m., we're talking about all things engagement here in the Old Pueblo. Tomorrow, we've got Tom Moulton coming up from the Southern Arizona Attraction Alliance. He's going to bring in all kinds of folks from Bisbee, Tombstone, Douglas, and Historic Highway 80 to talk about tourism in that area. On Fridays, we've got Dr. Ed Ackerley. And of course, every Tuesday, we've got the Engagement Hour with General Ted Maxwell from the SALC. But right now, we're joined live by Arizona House Representative from Legislative District 4, Matt Gress. Good morning, Matt.
Hey, good morning, Graham. Happy to be on here.
Hey, thanks for joining us here on Jump in Tucson. We were talking about before the break about how very few legislative districts are even all that competitive. So many of these are determined in the primary, but you're actually in a very competitive district in Legislative 4, no?
Yes, you know, the legislature is controlled by one seat majorities for Republicans in the House and the Senate. And in 2022, as part of the redistricting process, the Independent Redistricting Commission created a number of quote unquote swing districts that are very competitive. District 2, District 4 up in the Phoenix area, District 17 down in Marana, Oral Valley, Saddlebrook, that is Southern Arizona's competitive district. So just a handful of seats will decide balance of power in both the House and the Senate.
Without a doubt. So why don't you give our listeners a breakdown of where Legislative District 4 is located as well, too, for those that don't know.
Sure. And I call it the Mountain Resort District. I'm hoping that will catch at some point. District 4 includes Scottsdale, Paradise Valley, Arcadia, and North Phoenix. So many of the resorts, the golf courses, the Phoenix Open, they're all in that district. The Mayo Hospital and many of the hospitals, in fact, in the valley are located in District 4. So it's between the State Route 51 on the west side, State Route 101 on the east side, State Route 101 on the north side, plus Desert Ridge, and Camelback or Indian School on the south side. So it includes Camelback Mountain, Piestewa Peak, great hiking and great views. But it's also, you know, one of the more senior districts in terms of age, in terms of education. You know, many of the residents have degrees. The big thing about it is, it has one of the highest voting percentages. So nearly 90% of all registered voters in our district, they vote. And when they vote, we have the highest percentage of split ticket voting, where you'll have voters who vote for a Republican and a Democrat. They really look at the candidate and size them up.
Without a doubt. In fact, right now there happens to be one incumbent Republican, yourself, and one incumbent Democrat in that district, correct?
It is. It's a place where you had, for instance, if you remember back to the 2018 election, Governor Ducey was a Republican running for re-election, and Kyrsten Sinema was also running against Martha McSally. You had Ducey and Sinema winning precincts in Legislative District 4. So you had that split-ticket voting. For me, you know, I was one of the few Republicans to win the district, and I think that the biggest reason why I was able to earn the most votes in that election is I really focused on what matters to our voters. They want better schools, higher teacher pay, safe neighborhoods, secure border, low taxes, and light regulations. And those are the bread and butter issues that really are of great importance to our district. And I just kept focusing on those. And that's the same thing I've been focusing this cycle, with one notable exception. and that is the economy, the cost of living, gas, groceries, housing, the lack of affordable housing or attainable housing. Those are major issues that I'm hearing a lot about on the campaign trail.
Without a doubt. So we were talking before the break about all the heavy-hitting politicians that are in Tucson today, right? We've got the Democrat candidate for vice president. We've got J.D. Vance out there. And we've got Matt Gress here in Tucson as well. You were in the Old Pueblo this morning for a little economic roundtable discussion, no?
Yes. I'm very humbled that you would put me into the same category as the two vice presidential contenders. That's a tip of the hat to me. I appreciate that. But we got a chance to sit down with some Southern Arizona leaders to talk about the issues important to them, mining, making sure that we have access to these critical minerals that are going to be important for national security and for further electrification of our country. And then you have homelessness and talking about just how big of a challenge that is down in Tucson. And there are a lot of causes to it, but the individuals living on the streets, most of whom are suffering from addiction or mental illness for a variety of reasons, and it's seemingly getting worse, not better, despite increasing spending on services. And I think it's the approach that many governments are taking that mirror those of San Francisco or Portland.
Without a doubt. I mean, we're seeing those effects, you know, from those similar decisions made by municipal governments in San Francisco and Portland being made here in the Old Pueblo. And those effects are playing out on our very city streets every single day.
They are. And I think that there are two approaches to this. And I call it housing first or human first. Housing first has been around for quite some time, started on in these coastal cities, was embraced by the federal government and HUD. And, you know, when the federal government doles out so much money, they tie strings to it. And housing first is one of those strings. And what we've seen is that when you only provide housing and you don't require participation in treatment services for addiction or mental illness, you don't require job searching, responsibilities, a host of other things that people need in order to live sustainable, productive lives. When you don't require any of that and just give someone a roof over their head and hope that they can break their fentanyl habit, you are in for a world of hurt. You're in for a world of disappointment because these individuals are sick. They need treatment. They need help and healing. So I believe a human-first approach is a much better way forward. And that is that we're going to require you to get treatment. We're going to get you the help that you need. Whether you know you need it or not, we're going to be here to do that because otherwise, the addiction is going to get the best of individuals who are suffering from it. And it is going to be a rotating door, a spiral further down into the depths of misery. And that's not humane. That's not compassionate. And putting people in houses without providing them the treatment and expecting them to stay on that treatment is akin to warehousing them, not getting them the help they need.
That's essentially what we're doing here, though, in Tucson right now, right? Taking down old hotel properties and housing these individuals without treatment requirements.
I mean, you have to have that. I think of Gospel Rescue Mission, a center of opportunity. They have verified sobriety requirements. You have expectations around when you need to be back on the campus, when you leave the campus, and what you have to do at the campus in order to progress through kind of the stages of reentering society. And, you know, when you put individuals into these single occupancy units and check on them every once in a while, and these individuals are suffering from addiction or mental illness, it's a recipe for disaster. We need 24/7 surveillance and supports and services for individuals coming off the streets. Now, there are different steps along the way, but what we've seen is, you know, we'll take you off the streets and put you into a house. That's like 20 steps in the process forward without all of the work that has to occur before that point. And then we ask, well, did the person stay off the streets? Is the person off drugs? Is the person taking their medication in order to abate their mental illness? None of that is being tracked.
Without a doubt. You are getting the solutions over here from Legislative District 4 House Representative Matt Gress. We've got one more segment coming up with Matt after the break over here. We're going to talk a little bit about these ballot initiatives. There are 13 in a 355-page guide. We're going to ask Matt about a few of his favorites. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to Jump in Tucson and 1030 AM The Voice. Welcome back to Jump in Tucson. I'm Grant Kruger, your host, and we are live with Arizona House Representative Matt Gress on this election month. Start off over here. Mail-in ballots are going out, going to hit your mailboxes in the next couple of days. What probably has hit your mailbox right now, though, is a 355-page election guide by our current Secretary of State. Why, Matt, are there so many ballot initiatives this year?
Well, Grant, one of the reasons, some of them are constitutional changes, and any constitutional change requires the people of the state of Arizona to make those changes. Some of them are policy initiatives that may have been vetoed by Governor Katie Hobbs, such as the Secure the Border Act. And this is a measure that would require give law enforcement the tools to apprehend people who cross the border illegally and not at a port of entry. It would make it illegal to falsify your identity to evade our immigration screening for state benefits or getting a job, and it increases the penalty against fentanyl dealers. Those policies were vetoed by Governor Hobbs, and we think that the moment is so urgent that we need more resources for our law enforcement. So we're going to give them the tools they need to protect us, and we decided to bypass her and go straight to the people.
And that's Proposition 314 for those that are keeping score at home over here of the many propositions. Are there other ones that you feel passionate about that you helped create in some capacity here?
You know, we just talked about homelessness and the apparent lack of government intervention to keep our streets safe and clean. One of the measures that we introduced gives residential and commercial homeowners and property owners the ability to go to the Department of Revenue and ask for a refund of their property taxes if a city, a town, or county fails to do its job to abate nuisances around outdoor camping, public urination, or defecation. You know, all of these things that we've seen increased significantly because of a lack of government intervention and enforcement of our laws. So when we pay taxes, we expect to get services from government. And when we're not getting those services, I think it's fair for taxpayers to ask for a refund so that they can do the job that the government should have done originally. So I know a lot of places have had to put up fencing, had to hire security, had to buy cameras, had to hire cleanup crews to clean up after people living on the streets depart from that area. That all costs money. And if the city was doing its job, then these homeowners and property owners wouldn't have to deal with it. So this proposition would allow those property owners to get a rebate to cover the cost of abating the nuisance that should have been originally abated by the city, town, or county.
And that's Proposition 312, the aforementioned proposition that we were talking about earlier, a property tax rebate for non-enforcement of municipal nuisance laws. So, Matt, 11 of these 13 ballot initiatives were essentially referred by the Republican legislative branch to our ballot, two of which came up as citizen initiatives, right? The abortion one, 139, and this Make Elections Fair Act of 140, who had to garner hundreds and thousands of signatures. Are you supporting all 11 of the ballot initiatives that passed with the Republican legislator?
Yeah, so on the referrals, I'm supporting all of those. I think that they're good policies, whether it's addressing homelessness, securing the border, protecting the wages of tipped workers to ensure that they get you know, their tips that, that come along with the hospitality industry, or you know, going after child sex traffickers, providing them a life sentence. We had another one related to increased public benefits for police who are killed in the line of duty, so that their family has a benefits package that is commensurate with other states. You know, I support all of those. Now, I do not support the two initiatives. I think that the Abortion Access Act goes too far, and the make the open elections or the fair elections measure is really complicated. When it comes to elections, we need simple, simple, straightforward rules that people understand, and I think this goes in the wrong direction.
Understood. That's certainly a complicated issue over there, and I'm seeing and hearing arguments from both sides of this one. An entire newspaper was sent out to me and hit my mailbox as a registered independent over here, the Prop 140 Freedom Times, and it's multiple pages. I mean, this is probably the biggest election flyer I've almost ever seen. So there's a lot of forces at work behind Proposition 140 over here.
Yeah, I mean, the goal is noble. They want to engage more independents in the process. Right now, independents can vote in a primary. They just have to request the ballot of the primary that they'd like to do it. Most independents don't. You know, in my Republican primary, 4% of independents vote. Now, they do vote in the general because they're mailed a ballot. I think a simpler way to get independents more involved in the process is to just send them the ballots already without requiring them to request a ballot every election cycle. You'll get a larger participation. But I do think that, you know, there are the two parties, the Republicans and the Democrats, have two very different views of how to govern. One trusts people, the Republicans, and the other trusts government, the Democrats. At least that's how I see it and how I've seen it go down at the Capitol. I think it's really important for voters to be able to see the two differences and, you know, ensure that they're able to vote for someone that aligns with their values, and the party system helps make that easier.
Without a doubt. Well, people also are going to get the opportunity to vote for you, sir. Where can our listeners find out more about Matt Gress and your campaign for Arizona House?
Thank you. You can go to mattgress.com, mattgress.com, and learn more about our campaign. You know, I represent the 4th Legislative District, but my job is to look out for the state of Arizona as a whole. So I believe in common sense. I believe in rejecting the extremes and always remembering who we work for, and that's the people. So you can learn more about me at mattgress.com. And, you know, if your listeners have any questions for me, they can always reach out through the website.
No, we appreciate you, Matt, taking your time, not just to come to the Old Pueblo today, but also to jump in over here on Jump In Tucson and engage with us and have a fascinating conversation about just how many ballot initiatives we've got out there. This is a long ballot for all of our listeners to plow through. And I encourage you to take the time to read these initiatives and vote all the way down the ballot. Don't just get involved in the sexy presidential or Senate races, but go all the way down this one. Vote for those judges. Go through these ballot initiatives and educate yourself. And we really appreciate you both running and taking the time to join us on Jump in Tucson today, Matt.
Thanks, Grant. It's always a pleasure.
So we talked today about the Waffle House Index this morning, right? Tracking with, you know, hurricane responses. I'm worried that we're going to end up with a smoke shop index here in the Old Pueblo if we don't move fast and make some changes over here to make our city better. We've got 110 24-hour smoke shops right now, and if you were to track where those were located locally, it would be around some of the most disenfranchised and toughest areas in the Old Pueblo. And so I want you listeners to stay engaged. Look out for those ballots hitting your mailboxes. Let's not grow that smoke shop index any further over here in the Old Pueblo. A big thanks to Representative Matt Gress for joining us. And a big thanks to you, our listeners, on Jump In Tucson. Dennis Prager coming up next. Don't go anywhere. It's been a fascinating morning with you. Thanks for joining us on Jump In Tucson, 10:30 a.m. The Voice, your home for local news and talk.